From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, we're going to go ghost hunting. Here's what's happening. As we were reporting last night, Israel and Syria exchanged missile attacks early Thursday morning after Damascus launched an advanced surface-to-air missile that landed in the desert. Alarms sounded in southern Israel. Syria fired the missile in response to what they say and claim was an Israeli Air Force bombing near Damascus. Israel frequently strikes Syria to prevent Iranian entrenchment in the country, as well as weapon shipments to Hezbollah in Lebanon. India has reported a global record of more than 314,000 new COVID infections as a grim COVID virus surge hits the world's second most populous country, sending more and more sick people into a fragile healthcare system, critically short of hospital beds and oxygen. California's coronavirus case rate is now the lowest in the continental U.S., an incredible achievement that some claim reflects months of hard-won progress against the pandemic in the aftermath of the state's devastating fall and winter surge. The U.S. House of Representatives nearly voted for the second time in less than a year to make the District of Columbia the 51st state in the union, sending it on now to the Senate, where it will face some stiff Republican opposition. Anxiety disorders, a group of mental illnesses that cause constant and overwhelming anxiety and fear. The excessive anxiety can make you avoid work, school, family get-togethers, and other social gatherings. It sometimes makes you feel like you're about to die. Let's check in with our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Bregan. Peter, what causes anxiety to just pop up on people?
Yeah, it's a really good question, George. It's actually one I deal with a lot in my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. And, of course, I deal with it as a therapist all the time. You know, the characteristics of it really come down to feeling overwhelmingly helpless and frightened at the same time. Usually the whole autonomic nervous system's going on. You're sweating or you're breathing fast or slow, or you have a stomach ache, your heart's palpitating, and it feels very real. And one of the first things about dealing with it, and I'm talking now about it in its more kind of acute, overwhelming sense of panic attack, acute anxiety attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you some of the theory and then some steps, about five steps briefly on things you could begin to do about it. But it is, it feels like there's nothing you can do, like you're utterly helpless. And I tell people, you know, I don't mean this in an insulting way, I've experienced it, but we become emotionally stupid when we're anxious. Everybody pretty much says, oh yeah, you can't think, you're just overwhelmed, you're scared and everything. And I said, that's a big key. You don't want to lose your mind. You don't want to lose your intellect. And I explained that it comes from infantile helplessness. It's an attack of what an infant feels. It's the nearest we will experience to a small infant who is not getting nurtured properly or has a stomach ache or has been bitten by a bee or slapped by somebody and is overwhelmed. And what do they feel? They feel helpless. They can scream. They can yell, maybe, but they can't do anything about it.
Why do you feel like you're having a heart attack, Peter?
This is because your sympathetic nervous system is pounding. It's that simple. It's not biologic. It has nothing to do with biochemical imbalances. And it's the heart beating can scare you more. I researched that, actually, in a lab. The heart beating can scare you more, but it's not caused by your heart. That's all a response to this overwhelming sense the world's going to come to end, that everything's going to stop. It is not fear. People will say, well, I'm frightened. No, you're not. People can be terrified of things and then deal with them without going through a lot of anxiety. Last night I was watching one of these movies about tornadoes, and they were about people who survived, and one of the reasons they survived is they responded with fear, yes, but then they did not get anxious. They didn't get stupid.
Yep, that's right. Fear or flight. Well, what can people do without going on medication if they have a panic attack?
Medication doesn't work because you can't time it for the acute, and you don't want to blunt yourself all week long. So I don't think at all this is a medication issue. you have to deal with it actively, not passively. First, you have to know your signs. So the first sign you have that you're getting anxious, you have to tell yourself whatever your fears are. It's not biologic. It doesn't overwhelm me. I have to overwhelm me. I can control my mind. And then remind yourself, that's the first step, you know, pick up on it, tell yourself you can handle it. Remind yourself it's infancy, it's helplessness, you're not an infant, you're not helpless. And tell yourself it's not real, it's not being caused by whatever you think it is, even if you're afraid to go up on a stage or drive a car across a bridge. Well, that's unreal. You can do all that stuff. Other people do it all the time. Not a disease, not overwhelming, not real. It's a subjective experience. You got triggered into childhood and refuse to get stupid. So get your mind working.
Well, that's a good point. And thank God that doesn't happen to me when I'm live on stage, Peter. I don't know what I'd do if that happened. Thank you so much. Peter's website, by the way, it's his last name, Breggin, BREGGIN.com. June or July, he's coming out with a new book. He'll be on the program right around then, whenever it's out, and I'll tell you about that later on. The great work-from-home experiment occasioned by the pandemic has divided opinion in the corporate suite and sparked endless debates about whether employees work as effectively from the kitchen table and home as they do from the office. But a new study finds that, in fact, remote work does indeed make people feel more productive. How about that? U.S. equity market stocks turned sharply lower following a report that the Biden administration is mulling increasing the capital gains tax. The IRS has sent out a sixth batch of stimulus checks this week, delivering payments to another 2 million Americans as part of President Biden's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. What else is going on in the skies? We hear so many things these days. Let's check in with Kevin Randall. Kevin, what do you have for us?
Hey, George, how's it going?
All well, thank you.
You know, last week we discussed the latest native video showing the pyramid-shaped objects.
Yes.
This week I received information from a listener who noted that the objects on that video looked like those produced in another arena. He provided a link to a YouTube video in which someone had attached a cell phone camera to a night vision device. The video shows an object that resembles that found by the Navy on their videos captured the night vision devices. I'll have a link to that video on my blog so people can kind of compare it themselves. Talking with John Greenwald, he wondered if this might not be Condon 2.0. And you know, the Condon Committee was organized in the 1960s to review the Air Force investigation.
Right, and they, of course, poo-pooed everything, didn't they?
Well, their conclusions were written prior to the beginning of the investigation, which were to say positive things about the Air Force, that there was no threat to national security, and that nothing of scientific value could be learned by further research. And I'll link to a letter on this as well on my blog so you can see exactly what the Air Force was saying about that. In other words, these were recommendations made by the CIA-sponsored Robertson panel in 1953. Find a mysterious sighting that was later revealed to be something ordinary. Take the mystery out of UFOs, and the problem would go away. At that point, the Air Force began a debunking campaign, which, of course, failed. Now we have a situation with the Navy providing a mysterious video that we now know can be duplicated by digital cameras and night vision devices. Could it be that the Navy, and by extension the Deep State, is attempting to implement the plan suggested by Robertson and reaffirmed by Condon to end public interest in UFOs? Just so no one thinks I'm hung up on all this, I've lost my train of thought here. No, I have an interesting report that comes from Fran Ridge in the MADAR site. Last week, I mentioned a couple of reports from New York. Mm-hmm. And I've got another from New York, this time from the Utica area on January 29th. The witness was driving north when he saw bright lights in the field to the left. At first, he thought it was the lights of a truck, but then he saw a large craft bank over the trees, hover in front of him. He stopped the car in the middle of the road and stared at the bright object about 30 seconds. He said he was frightened as the craft leveled out and without a sound flew about 20 feet overhead. As it flew over, he saw the craft was cigar-shaped and that it had tiny wings that were swept back. He then saw another car coming, and he started up his engine so he could get out of the way. On April 17th, according to witnesses in Lenoir, North Carolina, they watched about 15 objects that seemed to follow Highway 18 north.
Wow.
The objects looked like flaming spheres, were silent, and flying at about 500 feet. They were in sight for about half an hour, and there's video of the sighting. According to investigators, these were not Starlink satellites, they were not meteors, nor were they Chinese lanterns, based on the length of the sighting. I also have to note here that this month is the 60th anniversary of the Barney and Betty Hill abduction. Kathleen Martin, Betty Hill's niece, has updated her book, Captured, to commemorate the event. And while I'm at it, I will note that Saturday is the 57th anniversary of the Socorro landing and the report by Lonnie Zamora. There have been a couple of recent books about this, including my own, Encounter in the Desert, which presents additional witnesses and new information about the case. And that covers it up for the week, George.
All right, Kev, we'll talk to you next Friday with another UFO report. They seem to be all over the place. Well, today was Earth Day, and in a moment, Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette, joins us. His latest film is called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. Jeffrey Smith is next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Smith back with us, noted author, international bestseller, award-winning filmmaker, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology, a leading spokesperson on the health dangers of GMOs. He's a world leader in GMO education, publisher of the Non-GMO Shopping Guide, founder of the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America. Jeffrey, welcome back, and this is Earth Day. Fitting to have you on the program, my friend.
Thank you, George. It's a great day to be here.
How have you been, my friend?
I've been busy. We just launched my fifth film on Monday, Earth Week, and we've been building up for this for over a year. And as we're going to find out, the pandemic pause and the awareness of the pandemic has set the stage for rallying the world's population to stop what may be one of the gravest existential threats that we're facing, and that's the genetic engineering of the microbiome, the microbes that, as we know, can circle the Earth and wreak havoc.
And people can watch this new film by going to protectnaturenow.com, can't they?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of information there. In fact, we did a live panel today with some experts, which we'll be talking about, and that'll be posted there soon as well.
What made you come out with film number 5?
Well, you know, I've been for 25 years convincing consumers around the world that genetically engineered foods are not safe, and we did a good job. About 48% of the world's population, 51% in the United States, believe that GMO foods are not safe, and that is driving those foods out of the market based on market pressure. But now there's a new type of genetic engineering which is so cheap and easy that biologists are targeting virtually everything with DNA, from bacteria to butterflies, from algae to animals, and we can see the possibility of massive releases of genetically engineered organisms, whereas in the last 25 years, there was about 12 genetically engineered food crops. Within the next 25 years, if we don't stop it, we will see potentially hundreds of thousands or millions, specifically the microbes as the largest number of releases, unless we stop it.
What are some of the disaster scenarios if things like that happen, Jeffrey?
Well, in the movie, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, which is just 16 minutes, we wanted to keep it short, it's completely free, we interview Dr. Elaine Ingham. Her graduate student, she was a professor at Oregon State University, her graduate student that she advised was doing research on bacteria that was genetically engineered to turn crop matter into alcohol. Some scientists had decided that it was a really good idea to create this bacteria and to send it out to farms so that instead of burning their crop residues, they'd mix it with the bacteria in big barrels, and 2 weeks later it would turn to alcohol, which they can then run their tractors.
Almost like ethanol, almost, right?
Exactly. So it was turning their excess crops into valuable fuel, and then the sludge at the bottom of the barrel could be used as a nutrient-rich fertilizer. Now, 2 weeks before they were going to release this outdoors, the graduate student who was doing research on that sludge, he had mixed it with soil and planted some wheat seeds. He came in one Saturday morning to his laboratory, and all of the plants were dead. They were turned to slime.
Oh, geez.
He thought he had done something wrong, but it turns out that the bacteria was still active, turning the roots and the plants to alcohol. Now, what's interesting is they were about to release that 2 weeks later. Of course, they didn't when they heard this result. Dr. Elaine Ingram was approached by whistleblowers at the Environmental Protection Agency who told her about a secret study that the EPA never acknowledged existed, where they released bacteria in a Louisiana field and tested to see how far it would spread. And eventually it spread around the planet. So she says in the film, if this alcohol-creating bacterium had spread around the world, it could have destroyed terrestrial plant life.
Jesus. If that happened, we're wiped out.
Cataclysm. And she said, she said, not all plants. It wouldn't kill aquatic plants, as if that was to mollify my fears. She said, yes, but it could kill all terrestrial plant life. Now, this was in the 90s. It did not get released, but it's not the first bacteria that was nearly released that could have wreaked havoc. There was another one called Ice Minus, which was designed to protect crops from frost damage, strawberries and potatoes. And it took bacteria, which normally freezes water molecules, it aligns them and frees them, refrigerates them, and made it impotent. So it wasn't able to create the frost. Now, it was stopped by environmentalists who pointed out, logically, that if you stop the frost from the crops, you'll also stop the frost from killing pigweed and other weeds, which could then survive through the winter and wreak havoc. So it was stopped. But now we know that that same bacterium is in the atmosphere and is responsible for producing raindrops, snow, and ice. So if the genetically engineered version were to displace the natural version, it could have theoretically altered weather patterns throughout the planet. So these two are examples of bad actors that were created for good purposes, well-meaning scientists, but they were unaware of the nature of nature, and what they could have done could have been catastrophic.
Well, isn't it true, Jeffrey, when you play around with Mother Nature, you're going to have some horrible ramifications?
Especially if you're dealing with the microbial world. There's some special features about that that make it particularly dangerous.
Just listening to you, I'm convinced COVID was made in that lab in Wuhan. Now, I don't know if it was released intentionally or accidentally. I don't know that. But I'm convinced it was made in that laboratory.
I've talked to a lot of scientists who believe the same thing. And it's an interesting question because we need to get political action on our Protect Nature Now program. But it turns out that conclusion that you have just stated turns out to be partisan. Contacting my friends who work as lobbyists in D.C., it turns out the Republicans favor that approach, the Democrats favor a natural origin, and it's just become a political nightmare, not a scientific discussion.
And I base mine on odds and practicality, and what are the odds of this illness popping up in Wuhan, China, and that lab is there?
And it contains the coronaviruses from all over China and is doing gain-of-function research on coronavirus. I understand the logic there, and I also realize that the pandemic as it is today could be a walk in the park compared to another pandemic that was not, well, let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of H5N1 avian flu?
Yes, sure have. Okay.
So in order to get that, you have to be around birds a lot. So it's very, very hard to get. But if you get it, according to the World Health Organization, there's a 52% chance that it will kill you.
You're toast.
The fatality rate of the COVID-19 virus is a fraction of it. So the H5N1 is about 24 times more deadly.
Stay with us, Jeffrey. We're going to take a quick break. I want you to pick that up when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, we'll talk more about your film, Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. Our special guest for the next hour and a half, Jeffrey Smith. We will be back in a moment as we continue talking about his incredible work to protect the planet, and that means protecting you and your family. Next hour, we're going to take your calls with Jeffrey Smith this Earth Week and Earth Day today. And we are talking with him about genetically modified foods, organisms as well, and just what science is doing, playing around with all these things. But we'll be back with Jeffrey, more to talk with him about, but calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jeffrey Smith. We're going to take calls with Jeffrey next hour. Do watch his 16-minute film called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. And then you can get it at protectnaturenow.com. Jeffrey, we were talking about the H4 avian virus. Why is it that originated in Shanghai? What is it about China where all these viruses start?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, it was interesting that when they tried to go to the caves where their people had contracted something like the coronavirus, they were blocked. There's a whole story that happened with AP. I think it may have happened with BBC as well. But what's interesting is that the USA Today a few years ago pointed out that many of the handlers of these pandemic pathogens that are worked on in the laboratory to what's called gain of function, in other words, enhance them so that they are either more deadly or more infectious, that many of them actually had either escaped or near escapes, hundreds and hundreds of accidents. And so when in 2014 it was announced that this H5N1 avian flu, which is as much as 24 times more deadly than the COVID-19 virus, had been made airborne.
Oh,
imagine
God.
What that would have been like had that been one of the deadly pathogens that escaped.
Oh, so wiped out.
Our movement, Protect Nature Now, at protectnaturenow.com, we have two main goals. One is no genetic enhancement of potentially pandemic pathogens so that we don't test fate. But the other one is no outdoor release of any genetically engineered microbes, whether they're pathogens or not. That's because the microbiome is critical to our health. It's critical to environmental health. And when you release a microbe, it can travel around the world, it can mutate, and it can swap genetic elements. The microbiome has evolved over billions of years. It actually operates about 90% of all human metabolic functions because we have outsourced it over the millennia to the microbiome. There's some amazing stories of how intelligent it is. And yet, when we introduce a genetically engineered microbe, it can disrupt our own microbiome, and a disrupted microbiome is responsible for about 80% of chronic diseases. It also can cause damage or even collapse of ecosystems. But unfortunately, George, you can buy a gene editing kit on Amazon for $169, and for some more investment, you can create your own home lab and create new genetically engineered microbes every day and release them into the environment where there is no recall. You cannot pull it out of the gene pool. If it survives, it can go everywhere and interact with ecosystems it was never designed to and cause significant problems that are entirely unpredictable.
How many people are out there playing around like that, Jeffrey?
Well, virtually every biology department, every biology lab uses gene editing. CRISPR is the most common one, but there's other types as well. Of course, the developers of CRISPR just won a Nobel Prize. Now, they have been reading the literature, as I have, and if you read the literature put out by the biotech industry, you get the impression that gene editing is safe, predictable, and natural. And they have used that lie to convince governments, the United States government, Brazil, Japan, all over the world, that gene editing should not be considered genetic engineering and should not even be regulated. So you can gene edit microbes and other things and introduce them into the environment, even into the human food supply, with no government oversight whatsoever. But recent research has verified that gene editing, including CRISPR, causes what one researcher described as chromosomal mayhem. And he was talking about the human embryos where they were using gene editing, where they monitored very, very carefully and found that it caused massive collateral damage in the DNA, similar to what we've seen with genetic engineering from the beginning. And yet very, very few people of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of creations of gene-edited organisms, very few of these scientists actually test the end product to see that it is the sequence that they intended, to make sure there's no collateral damage, and the very few that actually test it, publish it, and everyone is astounded that it's causing such problems. And yet the governments are still being convinced by the biotech industry to abandon any regulation for gene editing. The fight is going on in the UK right now. The fight is going on in Canada right now. The biotech industry is mobilizing pressure on the European Union. It's putting pressure in the United States. It is a global war. And I'll tell you, George, what's at stake are all living beings and all future generations, because we can see a replacement of nature in this generation where future generations will not inherit the products of the billions of years of evolution that we did, but instead inherit the products of laboratory techniques whose number one most common result is surprise side effects. And with the microbiome in particular, it can cause rapid transformation around the world of ecosystems and human health.
And left unchecked by governments or any agency, what happens?
Well, I think that if we simply let it go, what's going to happen is that $169 kit on Amazon, the power of it's going to go up, the price is going to go down. You're going to have, instead of the chemistry experiments that we did when we were in high school, you'll have all the kids doing genetic engineering and releasing microbe after microbe, and the food products, which don't have to be labeled in the United States if they're gene-edited. They don't have to be identified or even told to the government. You'll have things being sold as organic and natural that are genetically engineered. People will then genetically engineer that which is already genetically engineered. So we'll have compounding engineering, and we're going to have a change in the DNA like little genetic time bombs. And we won't know the unpredicted nature until something goes wrong. But it's not recallable. It's like the 24 rabbits that were released in Australia in 1859 so that people who were visiting the continent would feel more at home so they could hunt rabbits. Well, rabbits multiply like rabbits, and by the 1920s, there was over 10 billion.
Unbelievable.
It cost over $600 million a year in Australia. That's one new invasive species. With gene editing, you can take an entire ecosystem and replace it so that everything is as if an invasive species. It may look the same on the outside, but it may function entirely different, and we're talking about the possibility of existential threat.
I think I know this answer, but is there anything about genetic engineering that is good?
Well, you know, for years and still, our Institute for Responsible Technology said, don't release GMOs outdoors and don't put it in the food supply. Use it for research. I was on a live panel today, which we hosted for Earth Day, with my friend Dr. Michael Antonio, who does gene therapy research at King's College London. And he does therapy that could save people's lives, but it's not inheritable. So if you have a defective gene, his technologies, his patents might be able to help you, but it doesn't affect the environment. It doesn't affect the whole population. So for years, the Institute for Responsible Technology has just said no outdoor release and nothing in the food supply. But now that we are looking at potentially pandemic pathogens, we're saying don't even do that indoors because we haven't mastered containment. It's not worth the risk to humanity to create these pandemic pathogens, which if they accidentally escaped, could wipe out thousands or millions or tens of millions of people.
Are governments, Jeffrey, secretly trying to control, monitor all these genetically engineered episodes that are occurring all around the planet? I mean, do they have departments that check this, or do they just not even care?
Well, it's gone out of control, so there's no required notification of the government. If you create a genetically engineered microbe that's not used for commercial purposes, you can release it into the environment, and there's no law
Who would ever know?
Exactly. And it might come back to bite us. Now, I have been combing through documents from the Department of Defense and Homeland Security and the former National Security Advisor, and they're all concerned. They acknowledge that the technology has outpaced the regulation and that there are serious problems, both accidental and intentional, that can be done with new gene editing. So everyone is looking for a change, and what we're doing with Protect Nature Now is going to come forward with actual legislation. So if you go to protectnaturenow.com, there's an advocacy platform where you go there and you can send a pre-written letter to all of your elected officials. You can tweet them, you can send things on their Facebook page, sign a petition, send press releases to the media in your area. You can customize all of these, but you can do it in 2 or 3 minutes. You can have 100 different actions. And we've been approaching people in Congress, and they're very interested in what we're doing. And what they're waiting to see is whether we have a movement, whether we have support. So they're looking at the social media to determine whether they're going to champion the new bills that we want to introduce that will prevent the release of genetically engineered microbes and prevent the gain-of-function research on potentially pandemic pathogens. So I want to urge listeners not only go to Protect Nature Now to watch the 16-minute film, but go to the advocacy platform and just spend a few minutes there, because that is actually going to create the change. And you'll want to create the change when you see what's at risk in the film. Potential cataclysms, potential catastrophes, not just with these bad actors that we talked about earlier, but the general microbiome, which is so important that a significant percentage of the breast milk in mothers does not feed the infant. It feeds the microbiome. And the infant has been inoculated through the birth canal, inoculated through the breast milk, inoculated through contact with the skin. It's all designed. It's been designed for millions of years. And we may throw off that balance, and any change in the microbes of the infant, for example, can not only affect the health of that infant for life, it can be passed on to future generations in the same way that that infant got it from his or her mother. And so we're talking about a delicate balance of an ecosystem of microbes that run the world. In fact, we only have 22,000 genes in us, less than earthworms. But how are we higher organisms? Because there's 3.5 million genes in the microbiome inside us that handle most of our functions.
Already COVID-19 is mutating into different variants. And, you know, that's pretty remarkable for a virus which technically is not alive because you can't kill it, they say. So exactly. How in the world does this thing outthink humanity? I mean, what's happening here?
You know, what's interesting about the microbiome is it is more intelligent than we are on so many ways. I was talking to Kieran Christie.
And it's not alive, so how can that be?
It's amazing how they exchange genetic elements, use the host, find ways to survive, and then pass the best of their information to other microbes. It's this community. It is the most incredible networking of resources. So that if you put a gene in the soil in Arkansas to fix it because it's been sprayed with Roundup, it may sound like a great idea. But that gene that you've added to the microbe may end up in an infant in Africa. It may end up in the atmosphere. It may end up in the Sahara Desert.
Or mutating into something else.
So it mutates, it swaps genetic material, and it can also change. When you do genetic engineering, you can cause changes that will then go silent or change completely. And they did a study of genetically engineered crops, for example, and found some of the crops which had passed facade-like regulatory reviews, as soon as they got out there, they changed. How do you do a safety assessment?
That's crazy.
Changes.
I think it's a different life form, Jeffrey. It may have come from outer space, but it's strange. Let's talk more about that, and then we'll take some phone calls with you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.